Right, well, we're going to have another look at the questions which you had on your tables and consider them in a bit more detail. So the first question was, does Jesus really expect us to sell all our possessions? Well, the passage which Deborah has read to us from Luke follows on from the parable of the rich fool. We find that in Luke 12, 13 to 34. And you may recall that this parable was about a rich man who had an excellent harvest of his crops and was concerned because his barns weren't large enough to take them all. He decided that the answer was for him to pull down the existing barns and build bigger ones. He would then store all his crops and all his belongings in the big barns. And then the rich man could say to himself, "You lucky man, you've all the good things you have for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself." However, what did God say? God said, "You fool, this night you're going to die. Then who will get all the things you've kept for yourself?" And Jesus concluded that that was how it was going to be for those who pile up riches for themselves but were not rich in God's sight. Jesus then went on to say to his disciples that they shouldn't worry about where their next meal was going to come from or what clothes they had to wear. God knew what they needed and would provide it. Instead, they should be concerned with God's kingdom. And it's in this context, therefore, that Jesus goes on to tell his disciples that they should sell all their possessions and give the money to the poor. So was this as an instruction, though, just for the followers of Jesus, who he's speaking to at that time, or is it intended for all Christians? There are certainly other occasions in the New Testament when people are told that they need to give up their possessions in order to follow Jesus. And you may recall the story of the rich young ruler in Luke 18. He was told by Jesus to sell all that he had and give the money to the poor, and he would then have riches in heaven. Nevertheless, in Acts, Luke talks about the Christian communities where we'll find that most people live in their own houses and own their own possessions. And there's no hint of any criticism for them doing that. So is it therefore more a question of a Christian's attitude to possessions and wealth? A Christian's purpose in life should not be to store up wealth for themselves and their family. But on the other hand, God does not expect us to be feckless and wasteful with the resources that he's given us. However, if material items become more important than God, then at that point we're in trouble and we need seriously to reconsider our priorities. Our next question was, what is your greatest treasure? Now, we heard a few suggestions of what people prize most highly. I don't know if you've come across this, but a lot of children have a treasure trove. And I think Catherine's brought along some of her treasures this morning. She couldn't bring them all because some of them are a bit big. But if you're lucky enough to be allowed to look into a child's treasure trove, you're probably unlikely to find anything of real monetary value. Instead, you may find what we probably call a lot of old tut. But that's not the point. Okay, Catherine, let's see what you've got in your treasure trove. If you like to come here, that's it. Right. So these are a few things. Right. Oh, now, what have we got here?
Cracker.
Right, a nutcracker. And it's got, whoop, it's wrapped. There we are. Isn't that beautiful? Now, Catherine, why do you like this nutcracker?
I just like the way it just sounds there.
What? Just say microphone.
I just like the way it stands there and the decorations on it.
Yes, he's got some, sort of furry bits for the hair and the beard. And it's very colourful, isn't it? That's lovely. And why did you like think of a Nutcracker?
Because I was mad about the film called Barbie and the Nutcracker.
Barbie and the Nutcracker, right. Okay, this is Barbie the doll. Barbie the doll, right. Okay, Barbie the doll and the Nutcracker. Was it about a ballet? The Nutcracker ballet.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Okay, so that's lovely. Put that down there. And let's see. Now we've got a book called Charlie Bone and the Hidden King. Uh-huh. And why is this a treasure?
Well, I just like the book and the...
It's a good story, is it?
Yeah.
Good story. Have you read it more than once? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think you always tell it's a good story if you read it more than once. Right. So that's that. That's great. And anything else? Oh, yes. Ah, this is a Bible, but it's a very special Bible, isn't it, Catherine? Right. And why is it a special Bible?
Because it was given to me by Uncle Philip on my christening.
Right. It was given to her by Uncle Philip, I'm sitting over there, for your christening, yes. When you were a baby. Yeah, so it's a very special treasure, isn't it? Not only because it's a Bible, but because of the occasion. Right, that's great. Thank you very much. Do you want to leave your treasures up here for the moment? And there we are. So put them there. Right, so those are Catherine's treasures. Now, I must admit, if I had to choose a favourite treasure, it would probably be something like a family photograph album. So not anything of value, but in terms of memories and things which are precious to me, then it's beyond price. However, the treasure which Jesus is talking about in this passage is treasures or riches in heaven. He's looking to the future, not to past events. But although the treasure is in heaven, it's not only something which we'll own after death. God's kingdom is a state of on earth where his will is done. If you think of the words of the Lord's Prayer, they say, don't they, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven." So we need to be shaping our lives so that they accord with God's will. If we do that, then that's all we need to be concerned about. We do our best and then leave the rest to God. So the next question was, what are we supposed to be ready for? Now, the second part of the reading from Luke warns us to be ready. But for what exactly are we meant to be ready? To Jesus' listeners at the time, the warnings which he gives in this passage would remind them of the story of Exodus. Remember when the Israelites were escaping from Egypt? There it was the Israelites who had to be properly dressed and ready for a swift departure. And Luke refers to the Exodus story at various points in his telling of Jesus' journey to Jerusalem to emphasize the sense of drama and urgency. But why then is Jesus telling this story? Does it contain a message for all Christians or for Israel? Or was it a story specifically for the disciples? If we read on further in this passage, we would see that the ever down to earth Peter asks the same question. He says, "Master, are you telling this parable for us or for everyone?" Now, often references to a master and servant in Jewish stories was meant to be read as God being the master and Israel being the servant. So is that the case here? Is that what this is all about? Now, Bible commentaries believe the story can be viewed from several angles. Jesus is very much aware at this time that he's moving towards a showdown with the Jewish authorities, one which would lead to his death, but ultimately his greatest triumph and a total restructuring of humankind's relationship with God. Jesus repeatedly warns the disciples of what is to come, his death, his resurrection, but they do not understand what he's talking about. In this passage, Jesus is telling them that they have to be constantly on their guard. They may well have been lulled into a false sense of security by the buzz of the miracles, the huge crowds that follow Jesus, and his sheer charisma, which had led them to believe that if Jesus was with them, nothing bad could happen. But Jesus knew what was to come, and not only what he would have to go through, but what the disciples would have to go through. He wanted them to be ready for whatever comes, dressed for action. So that's one angle for that story. There's also a message for Israel, the nation of Israel, in this passage, though. And Jesus is warning the nation of what will happen to it if it does not realize that he is the fulfillment of the prophecies from the Old Testament. God was returning to Zion to right every wrong and was bringing with him judgment. The Israelites have been waiting for this for centuries, but they were still not ready when it happened. So that's the second angle. And the third angle, well, what's the message for us in this passage? Well, we know that Jesus has promised that one day he's going to return to earth to carry out his final judgment. And despite the views of various religious sects, no one actually knows when this is going to happen. So we need to be constant in our service as true and faithful servants and not lulled into a false sense of security. However, at yet another level, we need to be ready to respond when God calls out to us. For some people, it may be that initial call to come and follow him, to turn from wrongdoing and accept Jesus into their lives. For others, it may be a call to step out in another direction in God's service. And for others still, it may be the final call to come to join our Heavenly Father in heaven. But whatever the call asks, whenever it is, we need to be ready to respond with our lamps lit, ready to go. The next question was, how does Jesus serve us? So if we're ready and we respond to Jesus' call, what do we receive in return? When we look at the passage, it seems it's happiness. The servants are happy that they are ready to receive their master when he returns. Their diligence has paid off. And in return, an amazing thing happens. The master waits on them. Now, this certainly wouldn't have been what Jesus' listeners would have expected from any master. But we have seen that that is what Jesus offers us. We had a song this morning, didn't we, about the servant king, Jesus the servant king. And we see in the Old Testament the suffering servant in Isaiah, who willingly gave his life, who took the place of sinners and prayed that they might be forgiven. Jesus is also the humble servant who washes the feet of the disciples just before the Last Supper. And he's the Son of Man who does not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And we find that in Mark 10, verse 45. Jesus turns the world's values upside down. The poor are made rich, the meek inherit the earth, and the mournful leap for joy. The next question, I think, was what kind of burglar alarm could keep Jesus out? Now, that, I thought it was a difficult one, but anyway, this is what I think on that. Now, I don't know if you've heard on the news just this week about some burglars who were breaking into jewelers' shops by digging a tunnel. Now, suppose that there's so many roadworks going on now, nobody noticed another hole in the ground, but it does seem very strange to me that you could actually break into a jewel shop by digging a tunnel. Well, anyway, in Jesus' time, burglars would try a similar approach by digging through the mud wall bricks of a house. So the walls of the house are made from mud bricks, so you can actually dig through them. Now, evidently, they would have to be as quiet as possible so as not to wake the sleeping householder. And the only way to stop a burglar would be to stay up all night, alert and ready to leap into action. Not an easy thing to do, even for a few nights. Now, in our parable, at the end, we get a strange idea, really, that Jesus is the burglar. He's the one who's going to turn up unexpectedly. So then, what sort of burglar alarm could keep Jesus out? Well, I suppose it could be things like self-interest, pride, apathy, complacency. The things that we build up around ourselves and make a wall between us and God. And lull us into thinking, oh, well, it doesn't really matter, when really it does. Such things are like a pervasive weed for which a diligent watch needs to be kept and careful weeding required when they are found. And then our final question was, how can we be ready? How can we be ready when God calls us? Well, we need to keep close to God through prayer and study of the Bible. Do not underestimate the power of prayer and Bible study. We need to examine our lives and consider what they're centered on. As we started with the opening activity, we make time for things, but do we make enough time for God? Our treasures, are they being stored up in earth or in heaven? So we need to be proactive, seeking out ways we can build up God's kingdom, not just waiting for someone else to take the initiative. We need to look for ways to give of ourselves, our time, our money, of how to serve one another and our community, of how to care. The task before us sometimes seems so big and our own resources so small that it's difficult to know where to begin. But we've got to remember we have the most amazing resource of all, and that is God himself. If we do his will, he will help us if we ask. As you know, as a church, we're working on a number of ideas to build up our congregation and to increase our role in the community. The most important way that you can support this is by your prayers. So please pray. And the second most important way is by telling your friends and neighbours of what's going on at the church and inviting them along. So please tell them and please invite them. Let us show God that we are ready to respond to his call and to follow where he leads. Amen.